This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield. We've just heard about how the First Amendment, so central to our view of liberty, was mainly dormant till the 20th century. Since then, case after case reaffirmed something close to absolute protection from government censorship, prosecution, and so on, for even the ugliest and most belligerent speech. But the underlying premise in 1789 and up until now was that speech was scarce, hard to get into the public sphere, and once there, hard to ignore. In the internet era, though, the social media era, the supply and demand proposition has flipped. In the so-called marketplace of ideas, the key commodity has become not access to an audience, but the actual attention of that audience. And few have commanded attention better than the ugliest and most belligerent on the web. That is, until very recently.
Twitter is planning to permanently suspend Alex Jones's personal account at InfoWars. This comes after Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey was on Capitol Hill yesterday speaking with lawmakers.
Jones earned the boot, ironically enough, due to his coverage of a Senate Intelligence Committee hearing on policies of Facebook and Twitter. The event underscored a recent article by constitutional scholar Tim Wu, who argues that the First Amendment itself has been rendered largely irrelevant because its underlying assumptions have been obsoleted by technology. It is a body of law, he wrote, that waits for a pamphleteer to be arrested before it will recognize a problem. But rather than obsessing about the heavy hand of government, he says,
the greater threat, I think, to speech today is using speech itself as a weapon. That is, you try to flood the speech environment with your own version of reality. Journalists get attacked and discredited. It's a different kind of warfare, a different kind of speech control, and one, as I've said, that puts the Constitution basically on the sidelines.
Okay, to give a notion of how anti-democratic that is, you point to China, which has embraced this kind of drowning out regime more than actual censorship to preserve itself from dissent.
Yes, that's right. They just employed an army of a million people, approximately. No one knows the exact number. The 5-cent army, they're sometimes called, who just were paid small amounts of money to say pro-party things in chat rooms, discussions, obviously controlling what journalists say. Russia came up with its own techniques. They were the pioneers of the abrasive troll army, which swarms critics and attacks them, humiliates them. And unfortunately, those techniques have immigrated to the United States.
Actually, you don't have to go to Beijing or the Kremlin to understand the drowning out phenomenon. On Wednesday, a protester stood up in a hearing of the House Committee on Energy and Commerce. She was trying to denounce the supposed Twitter censorship of conservative voices, whereupon Republican Congressman Bill Long, a former auctioneer, jumped into the fray.
Please help us, Mr. President, before it is too late, because Jack Dorsey is trying to influence the election, to sway the election.
What's she saying? I can't understand her. What?
Steal the
election. $12.50, $15, $7.20, $2.50, $7.50, $30.
Yeah, was that a small-scale version of exactly the threat that faces us?
I think you hit the nail on the head or hit the hammer on the auction block. Control of speech today is about control of attention. Everyone's attention turned to the congressperson, so you know the protester was lost. But protesters understand that, too. You know, look at Alec Jones harassing Marco Rubio.
Don't touch me again, man. I'm asking you not to touch me.
Well, sure, I'm just bad as you nicely.
I know, but I don't want to be... I don't know
you want me to get
man.
Arrested?
I don't know who you are.
It's not just going to take my First
arrested,
Amendment.
Man.
It's not just enough to take my First Amendment. Oh, he'll beat me up.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, I know I am, but he's so mad. You're not going to silence me.
The whole world has come to turn on this game of who can get the most attention. with the understanding that's where the power lies. And it has fundamentally changed the media landscape and made the First Amendment something of a bystander.
Here's Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey testifying this week.
We believe many people use Twitter as a digital public square. They gather from all around the world to see what's happening and have a conversation about what they see.
We just heard Jack Dorsey talking about the public square. Now, you've written about a case called Marsh v. Alabama from 1946. It was about the company town of Chickasaw, Alabama, which was owned and operated by the Gulf Shipbuilding Corporation. And this town required a permit for distributing religious literature. A woman was arrested for doing that, and she argued that it was unconstitutional. And the Supreme Court determined that the town may have been private, but was in effect the public square, a public space. And the First Amendment applied. The woman was acquitted. This case has been cited as potentially precedent for extending the First Amendment to Facebook and Twitter as de facto public square. Is that a reasonable approach?
You're right that occasionally the Supreme Court has said a private company can assume so many public duties, have so much control over the speech environment, and be so much like a state that they themselves become bound by the Constitution. Normally, the Constitution only binds government. Even though I agree that Twitter and Facebook have, you know, tremendous power over discourse, the idea of them being bound by the First Amendment, to me, goes too far. Because, for, among other things, I think it's counterproductive. It would then make them subject to suits by, for example, fake users who are claiming that, well, you know, we're just robots and we want to speak too, or anyone who wants to have their say, would turn the whole morass into a giant bed of litigation.
So what laws might be enacted by Congress that could address the current reality without creating a morass or running afoul of the Bill of Rights?
I think there's two areas. One is the enforcement of existing laws. You know, we live in an era where journalists and other critics and speakers are routinely subject to death threats, harassment, essentially silenced. And I think law enforcement needs to see that they have a constitutional duty to protect speakers from attack. I think we do need new laws. I take the position that the First Amendment includes what you would call an accomplice liability doctrine, which is to say, you know, if the president calls, or any other politician calls out a journalist and says, you know, go get them because they insulted me earlier, that should be understood as a violation of the First Amendment. It would be illegal, obviously, for the government to arrest its critics, but ordering a private mob to attack the press can be just as bad. And if you can draw a direct line between the president inducing or cajoling or telling people to attack a member of the press and other people obeying his orders, he could be successfully sued and enjoined from doing so. This brings to mind, by the way, what I really think Congress should do. What we need right now is a new bill which fortifies the ability of federal prosecutors, states could pass similar laws, to go out and arrest people who are trying to hurt, destroy, threaten the press and make it difficult to report on news. The project of governance requires good information to make decisions. This country is in grave danger of becoming basically a lot stupider. I mean, it already has, but I actually think it could get worse.
I want to ask you about the old days when there was no internet, when there was no glut of speech, when political discourse was more or less curated by three broadcast networks, two news magazines, and a bunch of daily newspapers. The news organizations served as gatekeepers who made sure that extreme voices were squeezed out of the conversation. Now, one of the beauties of the internet is that it's far more inclusive and letting the audience decide which speech is intolerable and which isn't. What I'm wondering is, to switch metaphors, is compelling social media to self-police, to be gatekeepers, does that throw the baby out with the bathwater? And by the baby, I mean the beauty of democratic access to political speech.
It seems funny to me to have some nostalgia for the news reporting style of the 1950s, although it turns out that certain gatekeeping is important. I refer just to the basic idea that you report facts, you don't report rumors, that you occasionally bore your audience with something that is slightly less purient than whatever the president said yesterday. Now, I don't know if we need to go as far back as things were in 1959, the height of boringness, I guess. But we've certainly gone way too far in the other direction. Yes, you hear more views, but there is such a thing as going too far.
All right, Professor. What's going to happen?
The thing with a tabloid-style country is, like any reality show, you get sick of it after a while. And I wouldn't be surprised if we have a swing back towards, especially after this administration passes, something just a little bit more tedious. You know, it's like being at a restaurant where you're eating red meat all the time. I think people get sick of it. You know, you're looking for something a little more starchy.
Tim, thank you for your simple carbohydrates.
That's me. Mr. Broccoli, I guess. I don't know.
Tim Wu is a professor of law at Columbia University. His chapter, Is the First Amendment Obsolete?, can be found in the forthcoming anthology, The Free Speech Century. And his new book, The Curse of Bigness, Antitrust in the New Gilded Age, will be out in November as well. That's it for this week's show. On the Media is produced by Alana Castanova-Burgess, Michael Loewinger, Leia Fetter, and John Hanrahan. We had more help from Samantha Maldonado, and our show was edited by Brooke. Our technical director is Jennifer Munson. Our engineers this week were Sam Baer and Merritt Jacob.
Katya Rogers is our executive producer. Jim Schachter is WNYC's vice president for news. On the Media is a production of WNYC Studios. I'm Brooke Gladstone.
And I'm Bob Garfield.
On the Media is supported by the Ford Foundation, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, and the listeners of WNYC Radio.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.